Welcome to Inspired Radio with Helen Taylor. Get ready to be inspired. Stories have power and conversations spark change. So let's create a new world and get started right now.
Good afternoon, Melbourne. Good afternoon, Australia. And good day or evening to all our international listeners too. I'm Helen Taylor. Welcome to my show, Inspired Radio. I'm here with you every Monday, 4 p.m. Melbourne, Australia time, and Sunday, 11 p.m. Central time for US and Canada, for conversations and stories to inspire you. This is the BBS Radio TV platform, going live to over 190 outlets worldwide. My shows are brought to you sometimes by sponsors. And today's sponsor, I would like to thank. There are just a few people in family and friends out there that wanted to help me get this show on the road. And my sponsor today is Jo, my friend Jo. I've known her for over 20 years and she's a lovely friend. And thank you very much, Jo, for your support. Inspired Radio is all about change and getting uncomfortable and shaking up the status quo. My guests are here to tell their story, to reveal how they have overcome change and made better lives, not only for themselves, but for others as well. They're here to inspire you with their stories. This show embodies the spirit of love, respect, and compassion. And with that in mind, let me introduce today's guest. We are welcoming the amazing Magic Barclay. Her history is incredible. I just get this, everybody. Listen to her history. She wanted to work in veterinary science and study in that arena, but that road went off onto a 180 degree angle and she ended up working in hospitality. That led to McLaren Formula One connections. That led to a road in motor racing, ranking 14th in the state at one point. That then led into motherhood, which led into politics. Of course it does. Of course it does, right? Politics and an advocacy for kids on the spectrum. That led into her personal goals of weight loss and health and well-being, which turned into a professional career and her business. Somewhere along there was also a journey in surviving cancer. And then the lockdown, so in the last 5 or 6 years here in Australia, the lockdowns then turned her life and business upside down, and again, Magic reinvented herself and is now helping people with their health and well-being, helping animals as well, including our native animals, and expanding herself into permaculture. I'm exhausted myself just listening to all of that. It's incredible. Magic Barclay, welcome.
Thanks, Helen. Thanks for having me. And sorry, I'm just giggling when you go, and that led to, I guess that's key, isn't it? Reinvention is key to life.
And you're a master of it.
I tend to be.
It's wonderful. I mean, I'm saying this show is all about inspiring people, right? Well, boom, we've already done that, or you've already done that, I should say. So where do we start? Tell me about Formula One. That just intrigues me.
An absolutely amazing world. They say when a circus comes to town, it's Formula One. Just amazing people, you know, fantastic experiences, learning a lot about marketing, learning a lot about sponsorships, and then different cultures all colliding. It was just absolutely amazing. And I had one of the best mentors through that. And, you know, then that led to my motor racing. So, yeah, just absolutely amazing.
I'm glad you said it led to motor racing, because that's all it meant to me. I didn't even think about the marketing and advertising and all the rest. So had you been in business? Oh, you had. You'd been in the hospitality game before that. So that was a business-orientated arena, yeah?
It was. And even then, you know, every part of my life has led to connections. So when I was working for the Melbourne Club and the Adelaide Club and then on the Hilton chain, I got to meet the most amazing leaders of business and heads of state and amazing people. One person, we're recording this today on Remembrance Day, and one person that's always stuck with me is Sir Weary Dunlop. Like, right, meeting people like this, they were just amazing. And then, you know, with McLaren, meeting amazing people again, and then just making a decision, I want to race a car. And it was like, okay, let's help you.
Well,
So,
you were rubbing shoulders with all the people that could open a door, I suppose.
yeah, definitely. And so I had the support of the right people because I put myself in the right places.
Right. How did you do that?
No door is locked, no door is closed. If you find a closed door, kick it in. Move
So
forward.
you think it was your thinking?
It was
Your
just
goal?
how I've always been. Don't tell me don't do something because that's the next thing I'm going to be doing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's the reason I guess I love motor racing, just chasing that checkered flag. It's exhilarating. And I do that in my own life too. So, you know, every closed door has led to something else. And I'm not one of these people that gives up. So, you know, when someone says to me, I can't do that because, no, rubbish, absolute rubbish.
And something, there was a key word in what you just said there, because yeah, there'll be a lot of people listening to this going, yeah, well, kicking those doors didn't work for me. Or, you know, people that kind of haven't had the opportunities that, you know, that you have. The word was love. You loved motorsport, right? Do you think that doing something that you love opens those doors?
I've always chased something I love. And yes, 100%. So I loved animals. I wanted to be a vet. That didn't work. Well, I loved alcohol. I'm going to say it, you know, I was young, teenager. I loved alcohol and I loved food and I loved amazing meals. I could appreciate an amazing meal or a cocktail in front of me. Okay, what am I going to do? I'm going to give that love to other people. So, you know, I went into hospitality and then I met McLaren and I loved motor racing. I'd always loved it. So, you know, chasing love, things that you love, not chasing a person to love, but things that mean something to you, that's what helps you kick those doors in.
Yes, that's why I mean, I've figured some of those things out in my own life. And when you have, I'm listening to your story and I'm thinking, I can see her sliding doors. You know, remember that movie? Did you ever see that years ago,
That
Sliding
was,
Doors?
yeah, that was a really good movie.
Gwyneth Paltrow and I don't know who else was in that, but it was a very good analogy because listening to you, it's like when you opened up one door, you had all these experiences and those experiences led you to something else that you loved, which had opened up another door. I mean, it's simplifying it, I know that, but because I mean, going through those processes wasn't always just love and success. There was also, you know, a bit of hard work going on there as well. But it is, when you look at the overall picture, it's like sliding doors, isn't it?
Very much so. And for any listeners that are thinking, well, when the sliding door opens for me, I feel lost or trapped or whatever. It's okay to feel scared and it's okay to have a little cry. I've done that nearly every single time something's happened. And
Yes.
it's okay to spend a moment to dust yourself off and pick yourself up. You know, you don't have to be racing through that door. If you're crawling through it, that's okay.
And
But
that's a
you've
good
got to
point.
take a chance.
Yeah, that's a really good point, right? Because I call it just the waiting room. I just call it the waiting room. In between different cycles in my life, like in yours, there is a waiting room where there's not much going on. There's not much going on, is there? Just
Yeah,
a little
look,
while.
there's definitely days you're going to think nothing's ever going to come of this. I'm putting it out there, but nothing's coming of it. Things are never happening. The right people aren't seeing me. And that's when you've just got to push it and chase it. Make it happen.
Or keep your focus. Yeah, keep your focus.
Yes.
Keep your
Yeah,
focus.
definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's wonderful. Oh my gosh, that's wonderful advice. Thank you. Thank you. So tell me, so McLaren Formula One, oh my gosh, 14th, ranking 14th. Go you. Go you. Fabulous. And then that led into motherhood, right? Motherhood, politics, and advocacy for kids on the spectrum is what I said. So tell us a little bit about that. What is that all about?
So my first son was always very different. I didn't know what it was. He reminded me of my big brother, but again, I didn't know what it was. And then when my second son was born with major physical difficulties, we went to a playgroup, an early intervention playgroup for the second boy. And my first had a meltdown while we were there, full on tantrums, smashing things, trying to hurt other children. I could only just calm him down. And a wonderful lady there running the early intervention group put her arm around me and said, oh, he's got Asperger's.
Oh
And I
my
went,
gosh.
what? What's he got? What?
Isn't that wonderful, though, that I mean that it happened in that environment, so it got recognized for you.
Yeah, everyone else had told me he's just a naughty boy. He doesn't do what he's told, you know. And I knew something else was going on. I've seen this with my brother. So, yeah, when I got told he has Asperger's, throw myself into what is Asperger's, what
Right.
is autism, what is going on. Both my kids are on a spectrum. And learning a lot about how I could help my kids in a way that wasn't foreign to them. It may have felt foreign to me, but it wasn't foreign to them. Give them an opportunity to learn the way that they need to learn.
That's
And
beautiful.
yeah, we still live together and we've still got a very good bond. I intentionally try to drive my elder son nuts at the moment, because, you know, it's fun. We were planting some plants just yesterday, and I planted one crookedly. It's not perfectly in line with the others, and I knew he was about to walk past it. And he looked at it and he stopped and he goes, Mum. And I said, yes. He said, did you do this on purpose? And I said, would it bother you if I did? And he said, yes, you know it. And off he ran to get his ruler. He dug up the plant and he put it in perfectly straight. So now it's perfectly straight by the ruler. And you know what? I had a giggle, gave me something to do. And he could laugh at it last night. He was like, that was a little bit cruel, but I can kind of see it's funny as well.
Yes. And it's just a beautiful relationship by the sounds of it that the two of you have. But you're also showing him what the broader part of the world is about. Not everything's always lined up perfectly, right?
100%. I've always told him if the world does not suit you, create one that does. Make it
Ah, I
happen.
love that. Now you're talking my language. I love that. That's beautiful. All right. So that led you into that arena. And then you became a part of Carers Victoria, those sorts of things.
Yeah, so I helped write the Autism State Plan in Victoria. I helped on the board with Carers Victoria in the governance committee. And I really learned how to be a voice for my kids because it just wasn't out there. You know,
How
I
long
helped
ago are we
run.
talking about? Sorry, how long?
Oh, no, that's okay. Probably late 2000s, all this started.
So
Yeah.
okay, so yeah, I'm the same as you. I'm just going blank on figures.
Yeah, no, I would say late 2000s. And then I campaigned for an autism school in Geelong where we were living. And, you know, really threw myself into all of that. Ended up homeschooling my eldest because none of the state schools could provide a curriculum that was Asperger friendly and focused. And so homeschooled him. That was a great experience. The other one, part homeschooled through high school. And, you know, now I've got two amazing young adults.
But that's also telling me how it was only in our recent past that the spectrum was becoming very much at the forefront of things, isn't
Yeah,
it?
we would go to schools and I'd say all the pencils have to be, you know, the right size and shape for him. And they, like, I would take his pencils home when I bought them every school list year. And
Right.
I would roll them in glue and then in sand. And some I would, you know, do elastic bands. He loved traffic lights back then. So elastic bands up the pencil in the color of traffic lights. And just so he'd get that sensory experience, because no one at schools knew anything about this. And I'd
Right.
have to say, if he's walking around the classroom, he's still listening to the teacher. Just let him walk. Because if you try and make him sit still and listen, he won't hear a word you say and he'll disrupt the whole group.
So really, it's about navigating two worlds walking side by side. Where in
Yeah.
one world there's somebody with Asperger's or autism who's in one bubble of a reality, and you've got mums or dads and family and teachers in different bubbles, and that's wonderful because it's like you're trying to advocate so that both all these bubbles of reality work together instead of the old educational system was telling them to behave in a certain way and do things. It doesn't work, does it?
No, definitely not. And you know, we were lucky in primary school that my eldest actually got a teacher who had Asperger's. And we used to joke, my mum and I used to joke that when it came time to talk to this woman, if you weren't someone she wanted to talk to, she would disappear like she had jet-powered roller skates on. But if she wanted to talk to you, you would have to tell the kids to play till about 5 o'clock after school because she's still talking to you. And, you know, so that was great for him to find a kindred spirit. It was 2 years of primary school that weren't hell for him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, look, you know, it was only a moment ago, and now we've got companies that are finding jobs for neurodivergent people, and, you know, being on the spectrum is a lot more acceptable and known about. And I look back now and I think, like, if I had some small part in trailblazing that for parents, fantastic.
I think you did. But what I'm also hearing, Magic, is your sense of humour. Like, you know, talking about the teacher with jetpacks, and it's like that's a part of you as well that has been integral in getting you through all of these things, is keeping that sense of humour.
It's had to be. I was told a very long time ago, like when I was a kid, you're either going to laugh or you can cry. Which one do you want to do?
Okay. Yes.
Hence why I was moving plants incorrectly yesterday, because
yes.
I had to find some humour in planting the plants.
For everybody involved, for everyone.
Correct.
even the bystanders. Okay. So how did politics get into that, or was politics starting these particular, like NDIS and Care Victoria? Was it that, is that what you're talking about with politics?
Partly. There was also the campaign for an autism school, and that wasn't happening. And, you know, I would go to Parliament and I would make people uncomfortable, the politicians. And I remember we had a Premier, Ted Baillieu, here in Victoria.
Remember the name?
And, I got in his face so much that his people whacked me into a brick wall to get me out of the way. And you know what? These things had to happen because then I got the meeting I needed. And you have to make people uncomfortable sometimes to create change. And so I've never shied away from that. When I was homeschooling my kids, Tony Abbott was Prime Minister of Australia, and he was trying to cancel the carer's pension.
Right.
And so we went for a road trip to Canberra.
Okay.
And my eldest, who replanted my plants for me, knew everything about, you know, why we were protesting in the streets and why carer's pension was important. And so here he was standing in this beautiful Parliament House in Canberra. I don't know if anyone's ever been there, but it's lots of marble and opulence, and it's a very grand place. And this pint-sized little young teenager was screaming at the top of his lungs, "Look at all this, you know, gold leaf and marble, and yet you want to cancel my mum's pension. Really? How dare you?" And we actually got carried out of there by security. I turned around to him and said, "I'm so proud of you."
Yes.
He said, "Why, mum?" I said, "Because you're standing up for what you believe in, and that's who we are."
He has a voice. Absolutely. I love it. You're a woman after my own heart. That's why I'm doing these shows, is to give people a voice, because I also believe that as we are speaking out what it is that we are creating, it is co-creating something for us. Words, thoughts create, don't they?
Definitely. You've got to put it out there. It's not going to happen.
Yes, yes. You can't, you can sit around and think about it all day, can't you? But you've got to take some action, and even having a conversation is good action. Yeah. All right. So let's move on. So that then led into weight loss. Weight loss for you. What was that all about?
I was morbidly obese after the kids. And, you know, I've always been on the metabolic syndrome pathway. So excess weight around the middle. I've always had a high cortisol. Insulin resistance going into pre-diabetes. And, you know, my kids have always been my driving aspect. So when one of them threw his arms around me and said, "Mummy, all I want for Christmas is to be able to put my arms around you."
Oh.
Like, that was the moment I went, "I am too big."
That's a message and a half, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I love this because I want to hear more about this, because there are, like, you know, we couldn't count how many women or men are going to be listening to this and wanting to understand, well, what did you do?
I threw myself into fitness. So my next, I guess, part of my life was to get my fitness qualifications. And I loved weightlifting. So that was working for my body and it was working for my mind. And so then I opened a gym. But it was a gym for... Of course you did, yeah. It was a gym for special populations. So
Hang on a minute,
special.
Peggy. You're this, sorry, but this morbidly obese woman is opening up a gym.
Yeah, well, I wasn't morbidly obese, but the time I was opening the gym, I
Right.
was lifting weights for 3 to 4 hours a day.
So you
So,
got into the fitness first and you started to find a new body and a new form, yeah?
yeah, and then be inspired to help other people to do the same.
Right.
So, in the fitness world, special populations are people with disabilities, elderly adults, young kids, people with chronic weight issues, chronic health issues. So that was what my gym was focused around. There were no mirrors in it for a reason. The
Right.
worst thing when you're a big person and you are working out and you have body dysmorphia about your body already is to see yourself in a mirror.
Isn't that wonderful though? Because I'm hearing like your personal experience puts you in their shoes straight away, straight away. So you start creating an environment because you've been there.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
Definitely. I wanted something that I wanted back then
Yep.
for other people. So that's exactly what I did. I had that running for a few years until the collapse of my marriage, and then we left town.
Okay. So then what? What was next? Because I think I've got here that well, it turned into your professional career, which was the gym, right? And the business, yeah. And
Yep.
where did the cancer come from? How did that come about?
So when I left my marriage, my kids, pets, and I changed cities and ran away, and I was not well, and I didn't know what it was. I just couldn't put my finger on it. I'd been going to doctors before we left town, saying something's wrong, and I was being dismissed and unheard and told I was making it up and attention seeking. And when I moved, I finally found a brand new doctor straight out of school. You know, not jaded by the industry at all. And I said, something's wrong. He said, let's do some tests. And then he said, you're correct. Something is wrong. So I was still working out at this stage.
So what were you
And
experiencing? What were the symptoms that you were having that was saying?
my weight was going up by the day. I could look at food and gain 2 kilos.
Well,
I
that's
was fit.
fluid of some sort going on.
Fluid and fat, yeah. And I was fatigued all the time. And like I said, I worked out, a lot with heavy weights, and I just couldn't even move my body. I just was getting headaches and not feeling well and irritable, and like everything was coming down at me.
Very clear, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, he found the cancer. And that was a big moment for me. It was like, I can't keep doing what I've been doing. You know, all this stress over all this time has mounted up to the point where my body's gone, we're not doing this.
Okay. So where was the cancer coming from, do you think? You know, because you'd bettered your health, you'd better your lifestyle and your nutrition, had you as well with weight. Yeah. You'd done you were getting you making yourself better, and then sickness turns up. How does that
So
work?
yeah, cancer is a cluster of dead cells. So there's a process in the body called autophagy, which is the cleaning up of cells. All cells have a lifetime. Now, the body's supposed to be able to clear these dead cells. Cancer is when there's too many and they're put basically in a rubbish bin with the lid welded on.
I've heard
And
you heard of a guy called Don Tolman.
yes, I know Don very well.
Right. And I remember him saying his beautiful little comic routine about cancer cells. And I don't mean that blatantly or, rudely to anybody out there at the moment. But when you hear it, it's like, as you say, there's a lot of dead cells there. And the body goes, oh, where am I going to put these? Because the bowel exit is blocked, or the kidney exit's blocked, or the liver exit's not working very well. That's blocked. So we'll put them over here. We'll just stack them over here. And all of a sudden, there's a tumor, which is a collection of all of that waste, that rubbish. Is
Yes,
that right?
exactly. And these tumors are normally okay. A lot of us have small tumors in our bodies that are okay because they're just a collection of cells. But mine wasn't okay. And so it was in my thyroid, it was on the back of the right side of my thyroid. And the doctor that I saw, the endocrinologist, said, "Don't worry, of all the cancers, thyroid cancer takes the longest to kill you."
Oh,
And
that's
yeah.
supportive. Yes, okay.
And I went, okay, so how long? Because, I'm a mum and now I'm a single mum. How long are we talking? She goes, how long is a piece of string? I don't know. It could take years, could take decades.
Right.
She said, we need to do more tests. And my fluid was backing up. rapidly in my body. So I was getting bigger and bigger. I couldn't put a pair of socks on without ring marks on my legs.
Right.
You know, I couldn't do anything. And so they did more tests and they found that it had gotten into my lymph nodes, hence why I was building up with fluid.
That's what I heard when you first said you're blowing up. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So once it's in your lymph nodes, it's termed stage four. It's not always terminal at stage four. So people say, oh, I've got stage four cancer. You know, that's it. I'm done.
Yep.
With thyroid cancer, once it's in your lymph nodes, you still have a chance. And so I had surgery very rapidly. It was like my head was spinning. One week I was being told what I had, and the next minute it was like, we've got a spot for surgery. In you go.
You were on a roller coaster.
On a roller coaster. And, you know, I did that. I had the surgery. Looking back now, my personal choice would have been not to do it. I was also going through a divorce and a custody battle, and I was being told by my lawyer, if you don't do the surgery, they're going to say you're not being a good mum, you're not putting the kids first. So I kind of was browbeaten into surgery.
Yeah.
But it was the right thing at that time.
Sure.
So I had...
Hindsight's a beautiful thing, isn't it?
Oh, isn't it? Isn't it? So I had the surgery and then they said, right, because it was in your lymph nodes, we need to do chemo and radiation. And that's when I said, peace out, I'm gone. No, don't touch me anymore.
Yep.
So I threw myself into natural therapies. And that's where I met Don Tolman, who you mentioned just before.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yes, yes.
So, yeah.
You were already forearmed to a certain degree about health and the way the body works as well, though, weren't you, through the fitness industry and those sorts of things. So you, when you said no to chemo and radiation therapy, you were making more of a calculated assessment there based on what you'd learned and what you knew about yourself and health. Is that right?
To an extent, yes. I just didn't want any more toxicity. And I actually spoke to someone who did administer the radiation, and he said, where your cancer is, if I was to radiate you, you could lose your jaw or your collarbone because I can't get just that section.
I can't just target one
piece. Yeah. And I went, well, that's not okay.
No, it's not.
No. And then I looked into chemo and I read all the studies that say chemo can spread cancer. You know, I'm not saying to anyone listening, don't get chemo, but do some research.
Yes.
And I thought, these studies are scaring me. I'm not doing that. So I did fasting and I became vegan for many, many years. And I did what I needed to do for my body. Unfortunately, because they took my whole thyroid, not just the side they were going to take, I was starting to get endocrine problems. So my hormones were out of whack. The thyroid is a very important organ in the body.
Poor old body was trying to adjust because one big gland had been taken.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And, you know, this is a big gland that kind of makes all of your hormones balance.
It's the master gland. Let's say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's say that. And it talks to all the other systems of the body. And so now I didn't have this. And I was put on medications. You'll be on this for the rest of your life. And that wasn't working for me. And so I looked into what thyroxin was. And it's a T4 only compound. Now, your body, T4 is only one of your thyroid hormones.
Yep.
So your body needs several. There's T3, T2. And so I looked into natural desiccated thyroid, which is a T3, T4 compound. And that's better for my body. So I went on to that. And then I had to go through finding doctors every time I needed a script and explaining to them what natural desiccated thyroid or NDT is, and why I don't want thyroxin and why they need to write this script handwritten on a script form.
So you not only had to take the educate, do the education yourself or the investigation yourself, you had to then start educating the professionals that were around you. Because why? Are they only taught a certain way to address
yes.
things and to look at things?
Yes. So thyroxin is a big pharma product. NDT
right.
is not.
Okay.
So they don't get paid to write a script for NDT.
Oh, so they don't.
They also don't get paid to learn what it is. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I had Ian Brighthope on here last week and he was talking about that very thing, that, you know, there's a chain of command, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And the pharmaceutical industry is teaching the doctors what to think, how to think, and what to sell, really.
Mm-hmm.
What to
and
sell.
so yeah, in this time, just on that, I had to learn about the lymphatic system because my lymphatic system was up the flue-y, like it was just decimated.
Yep.
And I lost 13 lymph nodes.
Sorry to interrupt, but
no, that's right.
Out there, the lymphatic system is our drainage system. It's like the sewer out at the sides of our roads, right? And if it gets blocked, it's not getting waste out of our body quickly enough or even at all.
Exactly. So I learned about lymphedema and the lymphatic system. I went overseas and I did a course, and I did another course up in Queensland, and you know, I threw myself into this because I now had lymphedema post-surgery, and finding out how few doctors know the lymphatic system exists, first of all, knows what it does, second of all, I think in 2009 there was a study in America and they found that 0.7% of the medical system knew about the lymphatic system.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Hey. That's pretty scary.
It is. It is when it's vital, when we have a huge population with cancers and lymph system problems, and on we go, on we go.
And the first thing that's damaged when you have any surgery is your lymphatic system.
Yes. Yes.
So that threw me into that, and then you know, that led to functional medicine, and here we are.
We are. So tell me, let's go to around that lockdown time, right? Because up until lockdown, you had two centres open. Is that right?
I did.
Yep. Whereabouts were they, and what sort of centres were they? What were they for?
So they were in Hampton and Viewbank, both in Melbourne, Victoria.
Okay.
And they were lymphatic centres. Because I was doing complex manual decongestive therapy, so lymphatic drainage, on my clients. And learning more and more about functional medicine while I was doing that, I was studying at the same time, and, you know, being able to have someone on the bed and I'm draining their lymph and then finding out that their immune system was stuck or finding out that, you know, I had one lady with stiff person syndrome. I'd never even heard of that before, you know, and I had all these people coming in with these amazing things. And the one thing that they came to me for was because they felt unheard by the medical system.
So they were all coming to you post-treatment or post-surgery, because I had surgery in 2014, and I knew post-surgery that I went and had lymphatic drainage and lymphatic massage because I knew that part of my body was just stuck and rigid. And good for you. It's fabulous. So, okay, you were starting to educate. Well, again, I see that you had to experience all this stuff to then go learning about it, researching and then studying and getting, you know, functional medicine, pieces of paper on the wall saying, you were educated and authorized to do certain things. So again, you had to be, I call myself the crash test dummy.
100%, that's me.
I have to experience everything first and then go, oh, I figured out how to deal with this, right? But I had to do it personally. So then you put your personal experience into practice and started helping people who were going through the same journey that you had gone through. That's
definitely one. And then, you know, later in 2020 when lockdowns happened, I was an essential service, so I have a booking system.
Can we explain that, what that means, because there's people, we're going worldwide.
So here in Victoria, Australia, if you were deemed an essential service, so a service that people could not do without, you were allowed to work. You had to have a piece of paper saying you're allowed to work so that you could travel to and from work. And then you had to give something to your clients so that they could visit you. So teachers were essential services, doctors, nurses, pharmacists, supermarket workers, and then clinic people.
Yes.
So as long as my people got a text from my booking system saying you have an appointment at this day, at this time, at this clinic, they were fine to travel.
Yep.
They were allowed to come in.
Yes. So what happened then? Because your businesses were thriving and doing really well. Then we got locked down, but you still had the ability to leave your businesses open because you were essential. Yep.
I was essential, but people were scared because they were getting stopped by police, and just the draconian methods here in Melbourne were insane.
Actually, that's a good point, you know, because Even though I had an open view of the whole COVID arena and the pandemic or the pandemic or whatever anybody wants to call it, that I felt trepidation when I had to walk outside that door because we were being bombarded with kind of just quiet terror on leaving your house and going too far. And it was coming at us from all sorts of different directions. And if you turned off your TV and you didn't listen to the radio and things like that, you still had everybody around you who was either looking down at you because you didn't have a mask on or trying to walk, meters and meters away from you and circumnavigate you. The fear was, it was palatable, wasn't it?
It was. And if you've got someone that's got chronic illness and they already feel pretty crappy about themselves, and then you throw some police in who are being heavy-handed and saying, "What are you doing here? And show me your license and show me your piece of paper to travel or whatever, or this text or whatever," kind of you just don't want to deal with it. And so
Well,
this is what was happening.
they're already sitting on the edge, aren't they? Like mentally and
Yeah.
stress and just handling their illness and things. It only takes a little bit like that to tip them over the edge, doesn't it?
Did. And so what I found was I would be waiting at the clinic and people weren't turning up. And so then I would get a text, "Can you do my session on Zoom?" "Not really. I need to put my hands on your body." Like, not really.
Talking will not move your lymphatic fluid.
I can kind of tell you how to do it, but you're not going to get the same effect. So
What happened to your business?
I closed one clinic, I kept one open, and then when that started getting quiet as well, I went, "Well, time to pivot. Let's find a different way."
So what did you do?
Well, I'd been studying functional medicine, so I shut down the clinics. Very sad to do that, but I
Must
needed to do that. And I pivoted online. So I just started doing functional medicine coaching and working out, how do I do this now? How can I increase my reach? Not lose money with overheads, and because that's what was happening for the past 12 months. And how do I move forward? And knowing for myself that I didn't believe in what the whole COVID story was, I thought, I'm not going to be allowed to work in another clinic, so let's pivot.
Well, like many others, you had to completely reinvent yourself, didn't you? And
I did.
what I'm hearing too is a similar journey that I had. I don't want to be reliant on those systems out there anymore. I want to be self-reliant. And that's what I'm hearing from you is like, get rid of your overheads, those two clinics. Reinvent yourself, but how do you be self-reliant?
Exactly.
That is,
And how do I teach people it's not just the lymphatic system? Because to be honest, my clinics were keeping me just to one system, same as the gym was. It was keeping me to the muscular system. So how do I teach people about all 13 body systems? How do I do it in a way that's congruent with my lifestyle and that helps people around the world? And you know what? Zoom's an amazing thing.
How so?
I can do sessions all around the world now. I've got clients in the US. I've got some in England. I've got a lady in Canada at the moment. I had one in the Philippines not long ago. And I can do my coaching sessions, my mentoring with them, and teach them about all these body systems
That
via
is
Zoom.
so inspiring. That is so wonderful, love, because here you are having to close down two centers that were doing very well, reinvent yourself, but then you go international instead.
Yeah, it's like you want to close a door on me? No, I'm going to kick it in.
And you didn't know, though, you had to sit in that waiting room that I spoke about. There was probably a bit of time there where nothing seemed to be moving.
Yeah, there was. So I had a second job outside my clinics, and I was told to go home and don't come back. And so I spent a lot of time at home just going, "What do we do now? Okay, I'll teach one of the kids to cook, my eldest, the one who taught me about how to get into politics for him and all that kind of thing." So we started cooking, restaurant quality meals at home, and he still does that for my family now. And, so there was a point in time there where I had to say, let's make the most of what we've been given and let's not say, poor me, because I've never let my boys do that. And let's move forward. How do we learn something now in a time whilst I'm in that waiting room, whilst I'm working out what my next step is?
Yes. Yes, that's fabulous. You said on your website that you had turbulent years, right? And now we've got a little idea of what they are, like divorce and your health and business and change as well. For anybody out there, because there's so much turbulence now and so much of a call for change, and it can be very paralyzing for people when they can't see their future, where they can't see the next steps to take. What would your words of encouragement be for somebody out there that's really experiencing tough times?
I learnt basically when I found out I had the cancer. So circling back to that for a second, I learnt that I got it because I was so high in cortisol, so my major stress hormone. And so I learnt with the turbulent times that I couldn't revisit my cortisol junkie syndrome, which was I need to be stressed all the time just to get something done, because that's what I'd gotten used to, what my body had gotten used to. Not a conscious decision that I made, but something my body was doing.
It was called modern life, wasn't
it? Modern life on steroids, basically. But yeah. So in all of these times, something I had to learn was self and non-self. Now, self is something that is you, that you can control, that you can deal with. So I worked on the kind of person I was, because I didn't really like the person I was when I got divorced.
Yep.
And I certainly didn't like the person I was when I got cancer, because I wanted to blame everyone for everything. Nothing was my fault. And, you know, so self is how you work on yourself, and non-self are those factors out of your control. And so our body has self and non-self cells as well. So self is the cells that we make in our body. Non-self might be the bacteria that live in our body, or viral cells or fungus, which we need. They're part of our lives. So if something has happened,
we don't have direct control over them, just like we don't have direct control over our blood flowing and our heart beating and our lungs taking in oxygen. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So when something goes wrong in your life, work on the self, work on your response to it, work on how you're going to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and keep moving. The non-self is the thing that happened, or the people that happened, or, you know, the culmination of people and things and times and lockdowns and whatever it is. That's all stuff you can't control.
Gotcha.
But you can control how you react to it.
Gotcha. I have another way of looking at it, and it's the old version versus the new version. I kind of see us like the Russian dolls. You know, when you take those Russian dolls, you take a head off and there's another little one inside. Take that head off and there's another little one inside. I see us as just different versions that we've outgrown of ourselves. And when we get sick, we have to step into a new version. Yeah. And that
new definitely
has better behavior and better ways of thinking and a better outlook on life. It's not easy to navigate, but if you surround yourself with a lot of supportive and encouraging and loving people, makes it a hell of a lot better, doesn't it?
It does. It actually reminds me of a song. We were in the car earlier today and a song came on my son's disc play that he loves. And I don't know if you've heard of the series Stranger Things.
I have. I watched them with my nephew when he was living with me. Yes.
There you go. So there's an actor in there, Joe Keery, and he plays Steve in Stranger Things. And he's put out a song a few years ago called End of Beginning. And there's a line in that song, and it is, another version of me, I was in it. And that's amazing. Another version of me, and I was in it. Yes, you were, but you're not now.
No, no.
And that's okay.
Absolutely, because I think that unconsciously we change ourselves a lot of times through our life, but we don't consciously do it. We don't give ourselves credit for not being the same version we were when we were in high school, for example, or not being the same version as the person who left school and started working. We've grown, we've evolved into a different version. So that's what you were doing with old self, new self, was starting to separate, past from future or past from present.
Yes, definitely. Okay. And so, you know, part of my life is my family eating well. And I've always had a veggie garden. Like every place I've ever lived, I've had a veggie garden. Even if it was just pots on a balcony, I've had a veggie garden. And I thought, how does this work? Like, you don't just put the seeds in and they grow and, you know, you water them and there's food. It requires other things. How does this work? How can I learn more about it? So I learned about permaculture.
Uh-oh, everybody. Magic's just opening up another door.
Right? So now we live on a farm and it's a permaculture farm. And
Right.
so there's 12 keys behind permaculture, but the main premise is using closed loops. So what this means is that everything can be used in a cycle or a circle. So we did a homeschooling lesson here a few weeks ago for a friend's child, and he has a disability and not great with reading and writing. So we did a worksheet called What Does My Poo Do?
Okay,
And
let's open up that door. All right.
let's do that. So part of permaculture is everything has a use. Now we have indoor cats that have kitty litter. Rather than just throwing the kitty litter out, and this is how I teach people in a very simple way the basis of permaculture, we use the kitty litter to keep the wombat who likes to harass our alpacas away from the fence line. So we sprinkle the used kitty litter along the fence line. Wombat smells it and goes, not doing that, because he has a fun sport called harass the alpacas. Now the alpacas have poo, and that gets spread around our chook yard because it keeps the foxes away that want to eat my chooks. And then the chooks have poo, and that goes into the compost, which gets broken down and it goes onto my veggie garden to feed my veggies. And then the scraps and the veggies that we're cooking, like the carrot tops and things, the chooks get, so it makes eggs. And then eggshells we crush and we put into the soil. We try to keep snails and slugs away, but it breaks down as calcium for the veggies. And so on and so on. Everything has a use.
Poo, animal, different animal poo is a defense mechanism for other animals and birds and things, right? And you've learned
Yes.
how all that works. Wow.
So permaculture is about using the natural ways
This is nature. This is nature.
from the life cycle, from the ecosystem, and how do we harness that so that one of the results is we can grow our food.
Yeah. I love that because you said it's cycles and circles, cycles and circles. And I was thinking that the other day. It's we don't I did a little YouTube myself just for people just pondering. I watched the cycles of the kangaroos. I've got acres outside my place here and I see the kangaroos out there. And the kangaroos seem to be most of the time eating or sleeping or grooming. There's really eating or sleeping, eating or lying around. And then I realized that most other animals do that as well. And I'm like, what the hell happened to us? What happened to us?
We became so evolved that we devolved. And,
Yes.
we're sitting here on Zoom, on the internet, in our offices, talking. There's a whole world going on outside the human beings or the
But
human
what I
doings.
mean, but what I'm talking about, you got cancer because you were full of cortisol because you'd been running 100 million miles an hour for I don't know how many years, right? And operating out of nature,
Exactly.
essentially, right? Where I started looking at just how animals were behaving and thinking, hang on a minute, I think we are supposed to lie around quite a bit. And I think we are supposed to graze with our food quite a bit. And I think that possibly we're not living in conjunction with nature. We're living against it. And these are the outcomes, really, is sickness and behavioral problems and things.
Exactly. And just on behavioural problems and kangaroos, kangaroos have a very strict community structure.
I
So
know, I watch them out there and I try to figure out what they're all doing.
there's the buck male. He's the boss in charge. He's only in charge until someone else, fitter, stronger, younger, more sexy to the girls comes along.
Yes,
But
yeah.
that young male has to prove himself. So he
That's
has
where I
to
see them fight.
physically take charge.
Yeah, they're fighting out there and they arch their backs right back and they kick their legs out and then they box for a while and then they step back and take a moment.
And when the big buck is usurped by a younger one, he just goes, oh, okay, fair call, see ya.
Move on.
And off he goes.
Move
He
on.
doesn't wage war and he doesn't keep fighting for his mob. He's like, okay, and he will go off and find either another mob or he'll hook up with some other older bachelors and they'll just live their lives in peace. Sometimes he might join another mob, and kangaroos are great. If you're an old male, and you find another mob, it's kind of like you bounce up and they go, oh, there's crazy Uncle Harry. Yeah, he can stay with us. That's fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the females all stay together and they create a community. They create a group, a mob. Everyone raises the children together.
Yes.
Aunties, sisters,
yes.
Everyone's together. The females might go off in a small little school mob when they're trying to get their joeys out of the pouch, kick the kids out of home, and they'll do it so that they're in a small group safely away from the male. And, you know, they just have this community. Guess what we don't have now?
I know, we don't
and
have.
And they don't have behavioural issues. We do.
No, I watch them out there and I look at the respect. Even when the bucks are fighting, it's a respectful fight. It's not getting in there and getting blood and dismembering somebody else. It's very civilised to watch, isn't it?
It is. And they are very respectful. And, you know, kangaroos, when they see a wombat coming, they know a wombat is all about himself in his ego and he will bowl them over if they're in the way. So they'll part like the Red Sea to let a wombat through the mob. But they will fight fiercely if a fox comes in to try and take one of the joeys.
Okay.
And, you know, if a dog comes in, they will fight. There are male kangaroos that have been attacked by a dog. And, you know, the people will scream and you see them on Facebook posting, my dog got dragged into a dam and killed by the kangaroo. Okay, but your dog was going for the mob.
This kangaroo
did his job.
Yep.
And I'm so sorry about your dog, but shouldn't have been near the ruse.
Right.
You know, there's very few times that they will step outside their, I guess, their allowance for life. So they have a way of behaving and very few times will a kangaroo go, I need to be violent to get my point across.
So can I just let everybody out there listening know, did you hear her? Did you know, as soon as we got onto wildlife, that passion just comes out of nowhere and she's off, right? She's off. I love it. So this is not only now are you running this international business online, you are also into wildlife and rescue as well. And that's also domesticated animals, I would suggest as well, and permaculture. Right. So tell people about your business and what you're offering in terms of functional health. What does functional health mean?
Functional health is creating a system for all 13 body systems to work for you.
Mm-hmm. So whole body health.
Whole body health. So the business is called Holistic Natural Health and it's holistic with a W because we use holism to treat the body rather than reductionism, which allopathic medicine treats with. So holism means working all those body systems together, working what you're eating, what you're thinking, what you're feeling, all of these things together. So permaculture for your body, basically.
Yeah, because
and
if one of those 13 systems has gone offline, then it's not whole anymore, is it?
Exactly.
Right.
And it's not a closed loop. So then you need to bring something in like a medication or a supplement or a diet, or that's then going to close that loop. So that's super important.
Yeah. So what sort of people are you helping? For those people out there, who are you helping? What sort of conditions and things?
We help, sounds so broad and naive, but we help everyone.
That'll
we
do.
do.
That'll
we
do.
Don't turn out, we don't turn our backs to anyone. So we're treating people with vaccine damage at the moment.
Right.
We treat people with autoimmune or polyautoimmune, which is multiple autoimmunes clinging together.
Right.
We treat people that maybe their health is fine and they just want to learn more about how their mind affects their body and, you know, how can they grow food for their family. And
they want education. Okay. Well, vaccine injury and autoimmune are really big issues at the moment. So for people out there, that's what MAGIC is offering, worldwide to people. And so you're talking about also education for people who want to know more about how their body and mind works. And are you getting the permaculture into your business as well?
I am, yes.
Okay, of course you are.
So I treat people with mold toxicity. I have one client at the moment that's replanting her garden right around her brand new house.
Okay.
And she's planting mold-fighting plants.
Right.
So that she can use those plants, bring some of them inside, cut leaves, flowers, whatever, to make sure she doesn't ever have a mold problem again. So we treat with holism, like I said, and that's not just within our bodies, it's within our environment, it's within our friendship groups, and our family groups, like the whole thing. It's all important.
Okay, so you're just becoming, all-encompassing. Yep, all these different little arms that you've got to your business. It's wonderful. So how do people get in touch with you, Magic?
So people jump onto the website, which is www.holisticnaturalhealth.com.au. We are based in Australia and it's holistic with a W. We've got our podcast there, all of our links, our blogs, we've got quizzes, and then we've got a contact form. So you book and you send a contact thing in and it says RCA, which is root cause analysis, and that's your free call around the world. You get sent a 37-page questionnaire and then you make a cup of tea and you do the questionnaire, and then that gives us all of the history that we need to then be able to create a findings report, and then we do the call, go through the findings, maybe ask some more questions and really help you comprehend what your body's doing and where some changes are that need to be made.
Fantastic. And so you said podcast too, so they can have a little listen to you and get to know you even a little bit more than what they have in this last hour. But I'm pretty sure you've inspired a lot of people out there listening and sparked off some thinking, right? This is what's really good, having these conversations. Start thinking about things, because not a lot of people out there that I come across actually really love their body. Love tuning in to the aches and pains and the language of the body as it tries to talk to us. And a lot of people just want to go to an authority or somebody in a white coat or something and say, you tell me what's happening with my body. So you, with a holistic approach, are encouraging them to tune into their own body?
Yeah, so we're the teachers. Mm-hmm. We are practitioners, but we're your teachers. It's your body. It's your condition. It's everything is you. You're the one that needs to make the changes. We will, prescribe supplements in some cases, but it doesn't mean you're going to be on them forever. And it's just
you're
to give
a platform,
aren't you?
You're a little support platform for them to jump off.
Yeah. So supplements are a temporary thing to just get your body moving and create the mechanism of action that maybe it doesn't know how to do or it's forgotten to do. Yeah. Whereas, your modern medicine is they are telling you what to do and they are prescribing something that they want you on for a very long time, and you're not learning anything. You don't know how to stop it next time. You don't know how to prevent that from becoming something else. And I was there too one day. So, to any listeners that are thinking, I don't know how to get off that cycle, you can.
That's fabulous. And that's a beautiful place to finish up. Thank you. Oh, we've run out of time. We're going to have to do this again without a doubt, right? Thank you so much. Thank you for your frankness and for you sharing your experiences and the ups and downs of your life, which have been incredible to listen to. You're an inspiration for a lot of people out there. I have no doubt whatsoever. I want to just finish off, as I have, by thanking you, Magic, for being with me. And you have on your website this little thing, which I just want to finish off with. When life throws you a curveball, the depth of your passion may present opportunity. Don't dodge the ball, capture and control it. Thank you,
Magic. Motto of my life.
Thank you, Magic. Thank you, everybody out there. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll see you or hear you, or you'll hear me next Monday at 4 p.m. Melbourne, Australia time. Thank you, everybody.
You've been listening to Inspired Radio with Helen Taylor live on BBS Radio TV. Join us every Monday at 4 p.m. Melbourne, Australia, AEDT time, for more stories and conversations that will change your world.